We're going back now to 1348, the year that Ireland fell victim to the dreaded Black Death. The bubonic plague killed tens of millions in Europe alone, wiping out a third of the population and leaving countries reeling socially and economically. The Winter Dress is the name of a new historical novel telling the story of fear and upheaval experienced in the face of this unknown disease. The author is Angela Keogh, who joins me now to talk about some of the history that underpins her novel. Angela, you're very welcome to the History Show.
Thanks very much, Miles. Thanks for having me on.
Now, you actually wrote this book before the COVID-19 pandemic, blissfully unaware of any modern resonance that the novel's setting would actually have. It's set partly in Castledermot, which at the time apparently was known as Thistledermot. Tell me something about Castledermot in the mid-14th century.
I will indeed. Have you ever been to Castledermot?
I have. It's a lovely town.
It's gorgeous and it's just got an amazing amount of landmarks of all the layers of history in it. If you're in St. James's, that's the old settlement, the first settlement that St. Dermot initially established, and it was called Thistledermot, I think, then, and then it changed to Thistledermot and then it went back to Castledermot. So in the graveyard alone, there is a hogback Viking stone from the 10th century. There's a swearing stone, which with a hole in the middle of it, you can put your hand through it and shake hands with somebody else and make a bargain on consecrated ground. That's early Christian. There's a round tower. There's two high crosses with the stories clearly engraved on them, Daniel and the Lion's Den and that kind of thing. It was a teaching tool. That's before you even leave St. James's. There's a Romanesque church doorway of the old church. And that in itself, I found just so inspiring. Across the road from that, there's the Franciscan Abbey. And that has a carved tomb in it. Now, although it came from the 1500s, probably, it depicts two people who died of the Black Death, of the plague, and the kind of skeleton figures of Joanna Skelton and James Tallon on the tomb. And then behind that, there's a holy well. Up the street, there's the old wall of the town, which would have been in place at the time. You can just see a fragment of it. And then there's the Carlow Gate out the side of the town. And then you pass the pub, which used to be the Parliament House. There was a travelling parliament that used to sit there. And there was a pub called the Garter Inn there, which was owned by the Nuns of Graney, which was just out the road. And then at the top of the town, there's St. John's Leper Hospital, which is still standing in somebody's garden. It's just so fascinating. And all those layers, I suppose, and landmarks combined to really inspire me to look closer at that period.
So a town utterly impoverished when it comes to history and archaeology, Castledermot, yeah. One of the things that fascinated me was that it was, to some extent at least, a French town in the period that we're talking about. What was that all about?
That's right. So the early Irish church was there first, and they had been burned a lot by Vikings, of course. And at some point, a Norman settlement of monks arrived to the Franciscan order. They were French speaking. And for a couple of hundred years, the town was a walled French speaking town. I thought that was just extraordinary. Every time I think of it, it stops me in my tracks. It was a walled French speaking town.
Now, were people aware that the Black Death was on the way? I mean, obviously, communications were nothing like then what they were even a century, two centuries later. So did they know it was coming at that stage?
Yes, they did and hoped it wasn't coming. But yes, they did know it was coming. I was amazed. I did a short medieval history course in Carlow College. And when Dr. Margaret Nolan put the charts on the walls of the trade routes, global trade routes, it was like looking at a map of Amazon today. It was just much slower. So the trade routes were really well established. You could get anything, anything. You could have silks, you could have olives, you could have all kinds of spices. So things came up from China as far as maybe the south of France. And then they came on up through France in Europe from there, right up north to England, to Ireland. So much of it travelled on the trade routes. So yes, people knew it was coming. There's accounts from a friar in Pisa, and sailors came in on a boat, and it was said that anybody who spoke to them died. Even though they didn't know what caused it, they had all kinds of thinking about what it might be that caused it. And one of them was it was a corruption of the air. So if you spoke to somebody or you were in close contact with somebody who had the plague, it wasn't looking good for you.
Let's get this in some kind of perspective. What was the impact of the Black Death all over Europe? never mind in Ireland.
That's what I found really interesting, was that this was a European, a global problem that devastated Europe. So some accounts say 43 million people died from the Black Death in Europe, and other accounts say 30 million. But no matter what way you look at it, it's really high. Hundreds of thousands of towns and villages were left completely empty afterwards. We have our own chronicler in Kilkenny who wrote about the Black Death and wrote that once it came into a house, everyone else seemed to go the same way as death, I think was the way he put it, which I thought was pretty clear.
Now, you mentioned the chronicler. You're talking there about a man called John Clynn. Tell us a little bit about him, and do we have any idea what actually happened to him?
John Clynn was writing the daily accounts of life in Kilkenny. He had come from maybe Clonmel or somewhere like that, and then moved to Kilkenny and began to do his job, which was he was a scribe. So he wrote in maybe who married who, important events that happened in the city, mainly down to the people who supported his particular religious order. So the people who were wealthy and the people who were important. So their events, their life events were recorded. But then if something really huge was happening, that did make its way into his work. And he wrote about the Black Death arriving in Kilkenny on Christmas Day, 1348. He wrote about the contagious nature of the disease. And he wrote something really interesting. So the Black Death was called the Black Death because people had these boils and they were black, and there's much account of it. But it changed from the bubonic plague to the pneumonic plague. Now, before COVID, I had no idea what that meant. But now I have some understanding because I'm an expert virologist now. what that means. So what that meant was it was a slower transmission in the beginning. And when it became the pneumonic plague, it had mutated, I suppose, and it was then spread through the air. It was spread through droplets, and that's why it spread so quickly. And he described what it looked like when people had the plague, and he described both types of plague. So his work was useful to scientists 700 years later.
And certainly there was no shortage of social distancing in operation during this period, I believe.
That's right. Fear made hostages of everybody. So towns were shut. People tried to stop people coming into a town or going out of a town. Some people boarded themselves into their homes. This is all over Europe now, not just in Ireland. But funnily enough, some responses to the plague were for people to drink a lot and make merry, because on one hand, people thought they were going, death was imminent. And on the other hand, they did have some kind of a belief that if they were really happy and had happy thoughts and happy experiences, that death wouldn't visit them. Other people boarded themselves into their houses, and other people fled, especially the wealthy. They fled the towns and cities because they heard what had happened in other places. And people said the best way to survive it is to flee it. So that was written.
And did people, were there folk beliefs? Were there local beliefs about potential cures? Were there beliefs about who was actually carrying this terrible disease?
Well, you know, Miles, it was because of the women. That's the first thing I have to tell you. The women brought it. And the second thing was that it was down to the Jewish people. So I found this really fascinating because, you know, sometimes we look at modern history and we wonder how things happened. We wonder, how did the Holocaust happen? How could that actually happen? And when you look back through history, the Jews were persecuted at the time of the Black Death. Rumours set out that they had poisoned the wells. All over Europe, there were unbelievable massacres that happened to the Jews. All over Germany, Spain, Italy. They weren't put to death in England, but the rumours were there, you know, that this, they had brought it. Awful atrocities. But then there were other things, you know, it was a punishment from God for the way people were living. And the church really took hold of that particular concept because, you know, it made people turn back to God and made people be a little more devout. And funny enough, there was some competition at the beginning between the physicians and the church. The church wouldn't have liked that the physicians would have had the kind of power to cure people, when traditionally, of course, that was the job of saints and the church. So if somebody was cured after being visited by a priest, that would mean that the saint who he had called upon would be praised. But if the person died, it was the priest who was blamed. The saint was never blamed. So yes, and then the physicians had all kinds of cures. One of them was if you killed a pigeon and rubbed it on your head, that could have a beneficial effect. they lanced the boils and burnt them. And that did seem, that of all the things I read about, that did seem to have some value. And I'm sure it was pretty painful. People thought because of the corruption of the air, if they fumigated places. So there was huge amount of fumigation went on. Apple wood, lavender, all kinds of things were burnt and smoked. So much so that it killed some animals, I think, at the time. There was so much smoke, kind of. Bells were rung to change the air. Animals were driven through the town to change the air. And just people didn't really know what to do. And I suppose somebody had an idea and they went with it and tried it. And then the next town heard about it and they tried it too. And that's how it worked.
But it wasn't, apparently in Ireland anyway, an equal opportunities killer. It had different effect on the Anglo-Normans and the so-called Wild Irish, didn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So if you go back to the example of Castledermot, and you had the life within the town walls, just outside the town walls, there were several raths. You can still see some of them today up at the top of Mullacreeland. There's the old Rath of the O'Tooles, where St. Lawrence O'Toole came from. So their life would still have been somewhat nomadic, although that was difficult to do at that period because lands, they had been moved off lands. But they ate more meat than the people in the town, especially the poorer people. They didn't live in as close contact with, I suppose, people who were trading and, you know, strangers coming from lots of different areas. They were of themselves, although they did trade with the towns. So it affected them much less. And interestingly enough, I thought, that meant that when the Black Death came to an end, or that wave came to an end, the Irish chieftains and the Wild Irish kind of shifted the balance of power again, because the populations of the towns had decreased so much that they regained an awful lot of ground and an awful lot of power after that.
How did it end, do we know? Was it just the case that it ran itself out, that there was nobody left to infect, that kind of thing?
Yeah, that wave would have ended like that. And another wave would have come along a few years later. And there were many waves all the way up to the 1700s. There was a wave of plague. And I think it's not really until the 19th century where physicians discovered ways to inoculate and cure diseases that it was brought to an end. And funny enough, I read one account that said that most of the people who survived generations after were people who actually had some immunity to the Black Death. That only the people who survived, and when the waves came, they had some immunity to it.
Now, you mentioned the church. How important, how central was the church in Ireland during the Black Death? What kind of a role did the church play during this period?
So I think you can't look at Ireland at that time in any shape or form without looking at the church, because church certainly was culture. Now, there were kind of two churches. There was the Irish Church and the Roman Church, and they were both operating on slightly different lines. So some things, like, you could still marry several times in the Irish Church. You could leave your husband or wife, and all the children of that marriage, even if you married again and had more children, all the children were equal, of equal status. And the church didn't like that at all. So they had changed that rule, that only the first marriage was the one that was legal, and only those children were legally of that marriage. And it was hundreds of years before that practice died out. I always thought these things happened kind of, you know, a rule was made and then everybody followed it. That was not the case at all. Those practices continued alongside the practices of the new church. When the Black Death started in Ireland, it affected everybody, and it affected in particular the people who were tending to the dying. And that news travelled from Europe, but also from Dublin, or that where it came in first. And so people were afraid to tend to the dying. John Clynn writes about it. I have a quote here, actually. "The pestilence was so contagious that whosoever touched the sick or the dead was immediately infected and died, so that the penitent and confessor were carried together to the grave." So it was a big ask, you know. I'm not saying people shouldn't have done it, but people did find themselves without somebody to tend to them on their deathbed, yes. And it all happened so quickly as well. So in the Franciscan Friary alone, in 1 week, 8 of the clergy died. So there wasn't the staff. That was another problem.
The plot of your book involves two central characters. Rose, a wild Irish dressmaker. She wasn't wild herself, but she was one of the wild Irish, as it were. And brother John, who's a Norman monk. The novel itself is called The Winter Dress. It's published by The Harvest Press and available exclusively at theharvestpress.ie. The author is Angela Keogh. Angela, many thanks for joining us on The History Show this evening.
Thank you very much, Miles.